when you don't know any different about what's going on for you and you're thinking these things, you think those are real. And what was happening to me was real to me at the time.
This is Alan, and he's trying to explain to me what it's like when he experiences psychosis.
I thought I was talking to myself, about myself, outside of myself, by myself with myself. It was bizarre. It was like this quirky, fucking weird, what the fuck? And you know, in that moment that was happening, I just kind of went, well, whatever, too much pot. Keep on going.
When Alan was 29, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
When the year 2000 came along, then everybody was partying and, you know, party like it's 1999, you know? I was in my mom and dad's bed at 29 with the covers over my head, bawling my eyes out. I didn't know what to think anymore. I didn't know who I was anymore. That still happens to me. Who are you, Al? I hear that in my head. I still hear voices, too, to this day. They're changed for me, though. Yeah. It's not like they're adversaries. They're more like friends.
Alan and I are 16 years apart, and he is and always has been my goofiest uncle.
I have many names. You know, I go by Al or Alligator or Alphonse or Fonzie or Goober.
You know. I think I used to call you Dallin because I wasn't able to say Alan.
Yeah.
I don't know why it would be easier to say Dallin.
I was born in Fort St. John. 2 weeks after I was born, I was adopted. So my mom that raised me came up to grab me and got me back to West Vancouver, where I lived for the first 18 years of my life. All the way through the 18 years, I was on Maine, spring break, summer vacation, weekends, you know, so I really got to know Maine Island quite well.
When Alan was young and hanging out on Maine, like every other island kid, he was kicked outside in the morning and forced to entertain himself during the day.
When's the first time you ever smoked pot?
I think I was 7 or 8.
Alan explained that he got a head start on a lot of things because he was always hanging out with older kids.
I was a tag along for a long time until I got my own friends, right?
You were the youngest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. But that was kind of part of it. And I already had smoked cigarettes by then. I was about 5 when I started smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that that's what I was doing until I was in university, and they call it numbing. It's actually in a book. And it said, these are ways to numb, like all these listed off. And I was like, every one of them, that's what I was doing. With everything I did, smoking, drinking, TV as well. You know, I used to be a TV-aholic when I was a kid.
Those were the best days. Those are my best memories of video games.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was fully into you numbing out if that meant that I got to play fucking Sega Genesis.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to ask Alan what his life was like before he was diagnosed with schizophrenia and had what he calls his break with reality.
I wasn't in a very good space in my life at around, say, 21-ish, and I smoked and drank a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was mental health at the time or not, but it didn't develop into anything other than that. There were little things that were happening, but it wasn't a whole episode like I had later on, which I'll tell you about. You know, I told mom and dad about a couple of things, and they were like, okay, well, you know. One time was, I was on the bus, and I was 19, and things just went, you know how that kind of noise in movies slows things down? That's exactly what happened. Lights were flashing and stuff. That was kind of hard. to deal with, so I went over to Maine. And then once I got to Maine, that's where I felt better. I was exercising. You know, I went out fishing sometimes. I'd go to other islands, party, work, theater, swimming, cycling. You know, I was doing a lot better than I was in North Van. I had the support of the island.
Yeah.
My family.
Yeah.
A lot of good, really good friends. Like everybody, really. You know, so I actually had a good life. And then when I was 29 is when I had my break with reality, I call it. The 6 days you asked about, I didn't sleep. I couldn't sleep that whole time. Okay. I wasn't sleeping. I was still partying. I was still smoking. I was still working. There's a few blips in the radar that made people think there was something going on, but nothing serious until that day of the break. I thought conversations, all of them, no matter what I was in, were about me. You know, like I could hear voices telling me to do things and stuff like that. And I also had more thinking that was distorted, or, you know, ideas that were off. In the middle of the night, I'd be out in my underwear or nothing. In the middle of the night, dancing. I thought I was becoming like a super being because I could hear what people wanted, I thought. You know, I thought people would become 7 foot. Things were, it was a utopia. You could have sex with whoever you wanted. They'd be okay with it because it was 1999. And a new year millennium is coming over. We're changing, we're developing those different humans, right? I just thought these things were happening. And I was awakening, and I was enlightened, and I was all these, you know, wonderful things.
During this 6 day lead up to Alan's break, a 13-year-old me was on Maine visiting my granny and Bubba, who are Alan's parents. I can remember Alan's best friend, Chris, whose nickname was Birdie, running through the front gate and up the steps calling my granny's name. Joanna, Joanna, Alan's in trouble and he needs help. Being the kind of person I am, and because Alan was always my favorite uncle, I said, I want to come too. I wanted to help. Now, my granny is the kindest person you'll ever meet. But at that moment, she shot me just about the most serious look I had ever seen. And it said, you're not going anywhere, Buster. 20 years later, and for this story, I wanted to ask Alan what I would have seen that day had I been allowed to come along.
Okay, I had these ideas that, you know, people were going to have come and have sex with me because I could call them out in my mind and say, you're coming to my place and you're going to, you know. So I took off because it wasn't happening. I was getting impatient and I was like, okay, if you're not coming to me, I'm coming to you. I took off. I was already naked at that point because I was in bed. But then I thought, oh, I'll just have a little toke. Then I just went off and I walked down the street and I was just like, you know, this is utopia. People just thought I was on a really good high, for like, you know, acid or, you know, mushrooms or something. And so I did it. I went out and I, you know, there was an incident. I'm not going to get into that if you don't want. But
yeah, I don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I asked somebody for a favor and it didn't turn out, of course, anywhere near, because I was in this weird space. As soon as I asked the person what was for this favor, they were like, no, what's going on? Get away. Holy cow, what's happening here? Like, some part of me clicked in and I was like, uh-oh, what the fuck have I done? And then I just clicked out of it and then just started running back home. And I ran home and my feet were blisters, really. Because I ran naked and no shoes and gravel, tarmac, gravel road, whatever. I pounded. I hit the ground really hard because I was like in this really fucked up state. The ambulance attendant at the time, one was a close friend, the other one was, they're all, everybody was friends, basically, right? You know, I was just wigging out, like thrashing and wild. I didn't know what the, I was just having a big old fit and, you know, I was going through something I had no idea what it was. The one of them grabbed me and just said, Al, it's me, it's okay, I'm here. Al, it's me, it's okay, I'm here. And somehow that got me a little bit through it, like literally wrapped his arms and his legs around me and held me.
Yeah, oh wow, that's so moving.
Yeah, yeah. And the other person was like, you know, speaking reassuringly and talking and stuff. And yeah.
And like that couldn't have happened unless you had known these people.
On Main Island.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a huge thing. Yeah. Ambulance to water taxi to ambulance, ambulance to Royal Jubilee, and then I saw the person. They go and say, okay, well, you know, your son has schizophrenia. And I was like, what? I don't know what that is. Didn't sound very good the way my dad was reacting because he was crying. Never seen him cry before in my life. And my mom just goes, okay, what do we have to do? You know, it's like she was ready for it. Like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is my son. I'm doing it for him. The diagnosis was the part that got me really, like, because, you know, my understanding was movies. You know, the killer, the psychopath. That's a different thing. The psychopath and a person that has schizophrenia is a different thing. I just want to make sure everybody knows that one. So after that, I thought I was broken. Nobody would love me anymore. Nobody liked me. Stuff like that. I felt shitty about myself for a long time. I was depressed for a long time. There's, you know, voices inside my head for still now. I didn't know how to deal with that. And then as I started growing and understanding, and I always wanted to improve after that. So I did self-work no matter what it was, whether it was yoga or whether it was walking up a mountain, you know, back into theater was another one, working.
I wanted to know what it was like to return to Main Island after Alan's break.
Hard. It's really hard. Because, you know, there was, you know, Main Island, small town, gossip, everything's gonna, you know, be blown out of proportion. And it was. But a lot of people spent the time to talk to me about it too, though. I found that pretty interesting and comforting too, because they wanted to know about it rather than judge about it, you know. Yeah. Thing was, it was such a big community, and whoever I was before, people knew who I was before. They were trying to help me past. Main Island was this really fucking awesome place for me because I made a lot of connections there.
Despite this intense period in Alan's life, he's since fought hard to improve and understand himself better than he ever had before his diagnosis.
Now I feel like I'm more myself than I ever have been in my life, or I put it this way, I'm more integrated into my world.
He works a job, volunteers, and shares an apartment with his wife, Ileana. He recently began attending university in what he says is yet another learning experiment that has opened his mind. Alan even wrote a one-man play about his experience with mental illness called That's Al, Folks. He toured it with great success around the Gulf Islands. Be sure to catch Alan on stage in 2020 in a follow-up one-man show he's calling The Portal.